The 1995 Sandstone Symposium presents session number 235, Talk Radio, Utah Style, a panel discussion featuring Steve Mayfield, Van Hale, Martin Tanner, Kay Henry, and Tom Balberry.
That was coverage of the Sandstone Symposium. This hour's topic is Talk Radio, Utah Style. We'll be hearing from Steve Mayfield, who has a show on KTKK, Van Hale, who has a show also on KTKK, Martin Tanner from KSL, Kay Henry from KTKK, and a voice many people will know, whether from his own show or just from his being a Salt Lake celebrity, Tom Balberry. And they'll be discussing how Mormonism is treated in talk radio in Utah and just talk radio in general. And we'll take you now to Steve Mayfield, who is the moderator of our panel.
Good morning. Welcome to session 235 of the Sunstone Symposium. On behalf of the Sunstone Foundation, we welcome you here to this session. I'm your moderator, Steve Mayfield, and if you don't know what this one is, it's entitled Talk Radio Utah Style. We want to remind you that there are tapes of these presentations that we have at Sunstone out at the counter. There's also a message board in case some lost relative is trying to get a hold of you, or you need to get a hold of somebody. And if there's any questions that you need concerning the symposium, please check out here at the counter. As opposed to yesterday's heated discussion and the one panel I was involved with, hopefully today this one will be a little bit more fun. We've brought a very interesting panel here today to talk about a topic that I am really enthralled with and enjoy and am involved with on an independent basis. For the past number of years, throughout the nation, talk radio has been a rage and interest with the likes of people from Rush Limbaugh to Howard Stern to Larry King and many others. And Utah does not miss the opportunity to have a number of talk stations, at least four in this valley, that deal strictly with talk and discussion. It is my belief and thesis that there was one new thing that makes talk radio in Utah unique, and that is the topic of Mormonism. As a person who sometimes has four radios going at one time to listen, I don't think a day goes by that the word Mormon or, quote, that church or that popular culture is not brought up. I've also seen where programs are going real slow, nobody calls in, and then someone says Mormon, and the lines get busy. So today we have a very diverse group of panelists, people who have many years of experience in talk radio and in this area. Let me start here first with the first gentleman here, right next to the 49er cap. This is Mr. Thomas Balberry, the call voice of reason. Tom has 24 years experience in talk radio and radio as a radio personality. He originally comes from Gilroy, California, but has decided to stay in spite of everything else. He informs me that he is a high priest in the Church of the NFL. And on his note, he says, he ain't coming back. So I don't know if he's talking about Jesus Christ or Joe Montana. He may explain that to us. We have next to him Kay Henry, the cure for morning sickness, who until a few months ago was the program manager and a talk show host on KTKK. She comes from a talk show family and has had a number of interviews in the past on her program, including Carolyn Pearson and Mormon feminists. So she has a very unique situation there with some of the programs she's done. Next to her is Martin Tanner, a lawyer by profession, but a gentleman who has hosted both Religion on the Line on K-Talk and now does Religion Today on KSL on Sundays. Then next to him, last but not least, is a man who I've come to worship and adore, Martin Van Hale. I happen to produce his program. So he does Religion on the Line on KTKK on Sunday nights. He has previously done Religious Forum on KZZI and Mormon Miscellaneous on KBBX. He's also a private businessman, and I've been informed to let you know that he has five lovely daughters who are wonderful dancers. What we'll do is we'll allow each of the panelists a few moments to make an opening statement or discuss their feelings about talk radio and on the topic of Mormonism. And then from that point, we'll have questions among the panelists. I might have some, and then we'll open it up for you in the audience to have your chance to have at it. And when you do come up, we need to have you speak in this microphone that's to your right, right over here. Tom, start it off for us, please.
Thank you. I would like to defer to my gorgeous and esteemed colleague, Kay Henry, being the chivalrous individual. So if Kay would like to start out with the opening statements.
Sure. All right, fine. I was going to defer to you. All right, I want to talk about this subject. I was asked to talk about this subject. Talk radio, doing talk radio in Utah. You're waiting with bated breath to hear what I'm going to say. I know this, Tom. I'm delighted to be here. I looked on the program when it was sent to me, and I saw Kay Henry, program director, K-Talk, in parentheses, Jewish. So I didn't know if I was invited primarily because I've been a station owner, a station manager, a program director, or that I was Jewish. So I thought I'd take off on the Jewish part of it. When I got here in 1979, I was transferred by my company, and it was a family business. We owned seven stations in the Intermountain West, and one of them was KBBX, where I met Van Hale. We were running religion on the AM, and we were experimenting with different formats on the FM, which was how I became a talk show host, because somebody didn't show up for their shift one day. There was a man named Ed Decker that you're probably familiar with. He does not like Mormons. I had no feeling about them whatsoever, never having met one.
That you know of.
That I know of, yeah, that I knew of back in the Midwest and back east where I'd grown up and was educated. We got some threats. He was going to do a program. He had contracted the time, which is the way religious stations run. You contract the time, you buy the time, and you say just about whatever you want to. So we started getting threats about Ed Decker, and he was going to expose something about the secret temple rites. I didn't even know he had any secret temple rites. And we didn't really pay much attention. Well, we should have, and I don't know, Van, you were at the station, if you were at the station at the time, but a week later they blew up the transmitter. Which alerted me to the fact that I better take this pretty seriously. I didn't know if I was going to be next. So I don't know if they were Latter-day Day-nights or what. But that did happen. And that sort of changed me a little bit, or gave me a perspective, a shocking perspective. I had to temper myself. Jews don't apostatize. Even if you convert, they can't figure out why you would want to become Jewish, and you're suspicious to them from them afterwards. I mean, I can still remember growing up in the temple, and I did receive a Jewish education, and they would gossip about that shiksa that Saul married 30 years ago and now has four children with. And I took this all in as a kid, and I digested it, too. And when I got out here, there were actually people who wanted me to become their religion. Which, why would you want to do this? Why would you want to change somebody's religion? I just didn't understand it. So I was in a bit of cultural shock for a number of years. But I've grown to love this place. When people mention the word Mormon on the air, I sort of freeze, just the way you would mention blacks as a group. Well, blacks are not a homogeneous bunch of people. Mormons are not a homogeneous bunch of people. And you wouldn't let people rail and rail on about blacks. It's not really appropriate or to let people rail on and on about Mormons. They're not all the same. They're as different as any group of people. Just a couple of stories. My aunt did ask me once what it was like to do talk radio out in Utah. And this just came out. without much thought on my part. I said, well, it's sort of like being in a small room with a bunch of people, and there's a huge elephant in the middle of the room. And it's doing what elephants do. It moves around, and it's eating copious amounts and consuming resources and this and that, and it's pooping sometimes, and it moves around, and you got to sort of adjust as it moves. But everybody has agreed, in a sense, that you're not going to mention this elephant. That was one story. But shortly after that, one of my friends from Chicago said, now, I don't understand how you can live in a town that's controlled by Mormons. And I turned around very quickly and said, well, I don't understand how you can live in a town that's controlled by the Mafia and Fast Eddie Vrdoliak from the 13th Ward. So I was, by this time, getting pretty defensive about it. I said, you just leave the Mormons alone. Just leave them alone. We're doing just great out here. We have a great town, and I love it out here. That's about what I have to say.
That was great, Kay. I like that. The elephant part. I feel like people treat me like that when I'm at a party. They all pretend I'm not there and move around me. I just don't know what that means. I grew up in a Catholic household. Being Italian, it's automatic. You don't have a choice. Like growing up Jewish, you don't have a choice. You are. So being Italian, coming from all Italian family, this is automatic that you're Catholic. And I went to Catholic school when I was a little kid, and I have the scars on my knuckles to prove it. The nuns were a lot of fun. They they usually answer questions two ways, either with shut up or they whack you with a ruler. And pretty much the way they maintain discipline, but I have immense respect for the Catholic education that I got in my formative years and the way that they maintained their composure in the atmosphere of a bunch of unruly youngsters. But we had a lot of fun. Moving to Utah was a culture shock also. I didn't know anything about Mormons or Mormonism, if you will, or Salt Lake City for that matter. Closest I ever got to Salt Lake was in college when I went to, when I was playing ball up at Idaho State, and they had this thing on campus, and this was in the mid-60s, early, I'm dating myself, but I saw this building, and LSD, of course, was quite well known coming from the Bay Area. And I didn't look real close at the letters. And I'm thinking, they've got an LSD building here. Wait till I tell my friends back in the Bay Area they're going to flock here like crazy. I didn't know what the hell it was. And I finally, you know, being a little dyslexic, I figured it out. I said, oh, LDS. And I didn't have a clue what that was. But when I was offered a job at Call Radio some 24 years ago, in Salt Lake City, I thought at the time I was working in the Bay Area that that would be a great move because I was doing a certain kind of radio there, and the radio that they were offering me here was the direction I wanted to go. So I thought, I'll come to Salt Lake for a couple of years and go back to San Francisco. 24 years later, I'm still waiting to unpack my bags and unhook the U-Haul. I mean, I've just been having so much fun. I've been thoroughly enjoying it, and it's but my introduction to Salt Lake City was in 1971. They flew me out here on a Sunday to show me around, the manager of the station, and so I flew out, and they picked me up at the airport and immediately drove me up in back of the Capitol. Now, I had thought Salt Lake was a desert. I mean, ugly desert. And here I landed in this lush green valley with these snow-capped peaks. It was like June. And they drove me up in back of the Capitol, and the air was clear, which stunned me because coming from San Jose, I was not used to that. California has two seasons, brown and browner. And here the valley was. It was beautiful green valley, snow-capped peaks, and I was stunned. This is a gorgeous place. So then they drove me down to the station right here on South Temple from up there, and I noticed as we were driving down that there weren't any cars. And after a few blocks, I asked Benny Williams, the manager, and I says, where is everybody? Nobody on the streets? And where is everybody? He said, they're in church. I said, all of them? Yeah. And so that was my introduction to Salt Lake City back in 1971. As far as talk radio goes, and the subject as Kay mentioned, I used to for a long time cringe when the word Mormon was mentioned, because I also felt self-conscious that just by the mere mention of the word, you were offending somebody. And
you probably
were. And you probably was. My first introduction to the importance of what goes on in this town was the first football season when KSL blacked out a Vikings game in lieu of conference, and I didn't know what the hell conference was. But I was really angry. And so I expressed that on the air following Monday, saying, you know, the Roselle rule is if conference is not sold out, it should be blacked out locally, so they should have televised the Viking game. And I was summoned upstairs and informed that you do not make fun of conference. So.
Yeah.
So I've been making fun of conference every year for the past 24 years. But it's a beautiful place to live, and as far as you can't get away from the subject of Mormons, Mormonism, LDS Church, whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it, because it's an integral part, obviously, from every facet of life, business, politics, and religion. And here they are intermingled as thickly as they can be in any other seat of any other religion, whether it's Mecca, whether it's Boston, whether it is Rome.
Tel Aviv,
indeed. So it's not much different than those places. Anyway, that was my introduction to Salt Lake, and I've been having a lot of fun with it ever since. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, in 1980, I was walking around my house, talking to the radio, and my children wondered what in the world I was doing. I had received a phone call, and a good friend of mine had called up and said, go listen, go turn your radio on. So I turned my radio on to Utah's golden gospel giant, KBBX, 5,000 watts of power or something like that. And at 7 o'clock every morning, there was a man on the radio by the name of John Henry Yount. And he was a radio person himself, professionally, but he was also an ex-Mormon. And he proceeded every day for 15 minutes in the morning while I was getting ready and my children were getting ready for school to attack and tear down and make fun of everything I held sacred and dear. And so I'm walking around the house talking to the radio and and addressing myself to every point that he brought up. And this went on for some time, and I decided, or the thought went through my mind, I'd like to respond to this person. And I was at work one time listening to another anti-Mormon program that was broadcast on the Golden Gospel Giant, and a very strange thing happened. I was certain that a radio station that would broadcast these kinds of programs was undoubtedly owned by a religious group or a religious person with a religious persuasion that was anti-Mormon. And so I was sure that there was no way in the world possible of addressing this individual over the air. Well, a funny thing happened, and that was that I heard one of the church's Homefront commercials on the station, and I knew from my background that the experience that I'd had with people who were anti-Mormon, that they would never, ever, under any circumstance, consider playing an LDS church Homefront commercial on the radio station. So all of a sudden, I thought there's something peculiar here with this station. So I called up the radio station, and I didn't know it at the time that the station was run by a Jewish feminist and her brother, but I met Kay Henry. I just found out today from the program that I knew that she was Jewish, but I didn't know that she was necessarily a Jewish feminist. although I would certainly have learned that over the years of hearing her on talk radio. But at that time, I didn't know who she was, and I just presented the question to them: would there be any chance of possibly doing a program on the station that was pro-LDS? And I was very surprised at the response. The response was immediate, with no thought. Yes, that would be fine. We would enjoy something like that. And when I found out that the station was part of a small group of stations owned by a Jewish family doing Christian broadcasting, I was, you know, I'm still wondering over that. I wish Kay had addressed herself to that. I don't know. I guess there must be some profit motive or something in Christian radio. I don't know, but in fact, as I think about it, that's one question I've had in my mind all these years, but I've never really asked. I'll ask you after.
What's the question?
I'll ask you when we get to her. When we get to ask questions of each other. That's a good one. At any rate, a friend of mine, Bill Forrest, and I started doing a radio broadcast, and we had no background whatsoever in radio. And I remember very well going to our first program. And what we had planned to do is we were going to go in and do a different kind of a radio program than the anti-Mormon programs that we were hearing. We were going to go on the radio, have an open forum, and we were going to sit there and just chat casually with people who would call in on the air, and we would talk about some of the details and so forth of Mormon history and doctrine, and we would just have a real nice time. Well, the first caller that called in was someone who spent a few hours a day working and the rest of the day in an actively producing and disseminating anti-Mormon literature. And that kind of set the tone and for the program for the next 6 years on KBBX. And one of the things that surprised me, I've listed a few surprises that I encountered on the radio. One thing that surprised me was that we couldn't just sit there and have a nice, mellow conversation about Mormon history and doctrine. That there's no way in the world to do that in Salt Lake City, and probably nowhere else either, I suspect. But we so for 6 years, we had calls coming in twice a week as we would do our program, and it seemed to me, I never really counted, but it seemed to me over the years that the calls were about half strongly anti-Mormon callers and about half strongly pro-LDS callers, and nothing in between. And along with that, we indicated that the program was open to any kind of questions or comments or whatever, and in 6 years, I don't think we ever had anybody call in and with a question. I mean, there were people call in with a question, but it was a trap. It was a question with a trap at the end. They weren't trying to solicit information. It was a question trying to put somebody in a corner. And so that was it. What we encountered is that everyone who called in on talk radio on the subject of Mormonism, either side, had no interest in information because they already knew the knew all the answers. So that's something that I've seen that surprised me a little bit, is the polarity that we find in the Valley, at least on talk radio. I don't know if it's that pronounced throughout our society, but at least on talk radio, there is an extreme polarity. The another thing that surprised me in our program was that the interest seemed to be that the time we were doing this, there were a lot of women's issues. That was a real hot issue in Mormonism and in the Valley at the time. And every program that came up, I was surprised that that topic never came up. I started thinking about it and noticing what kinds of topics came up on our program and what kind of topics did not. And I thought that was interesting. The kinds of topics that just did not come up on our program were political issues, things that were very current. None of the debate that was going on on all of these women's issues and things never came up. And that surprised me. The topics that did come up, and I'm talking now about this period of time on KBBX. I've also been on KZZI radio for a couple of years, and on KMGR for a little while, and then on K-Talk for the last, I don't know, couple of years. And each station's been just a little bit different than the other one. But the topics that came up that seem to be, I've just kind of rated them, about one and two is about all I can come up with. But the number one topic that comes up, and our program, of course, is different than some of the other talk programs, because where we were not, where we didn't freeze when the word Mormon came up, that was really what we were there to do, is talk about Mormonism and engage that kind of a discussion. So our program was obviously different. But the number one topic that we have addressed over the years, just the perennial subject that is of greatest interest, is issues relating to the LDS concept of God. Nothing else even comes close. And the second issue that comes up with enough frequency that I would say feel comfortable without actually doing a count in saying that it was second, is the LDS concept of salvation. And I thought that was just, I don't know quite what to make out of all of that, that the current events, something like the Bachman incident or something like that, just doesn't seem to come up on the type of talk radio that I do. I think it's that perhaps the audience that we have is an audience that is more interested in looking back with some reflection or something on things that have happened some years back. And then let me just let me give you another surprise that I had, one of the big surprises. And this was a surprise that came from my partner, Bill Forrest. I was sitting there one day. I was surprised to find out from him a particular kind of church discipline that the LDS Church was using that I hadn't known about. And we were sitting there, we were talking about how individuals were being disciplined in the church in this particular program. And Bill, I'm just sitting there waiting till he's through with his comment to throw something in. And he tells the audience, he mentions to the audience that about the LDS Church castigating people. Well, so that's what he meant to say. And out of the corner of my eye, nothing happened. He just went on. And I was kind of new at this talk radio thing anyway. And I didn't know what to do. So that's on the record. And I'm sure that somewhere 100 years from now, somebody will produce a transcript of that program and use that as evidence that the LDS Church was making eunuchs out of people who were disobedient. So that was one of the surprises. I see that the time is up. Let me just mention in quick conclusion just a couple of things that I jotted down. Questions most frequently asked, and without any question, the question that we were most frequently asked on the radio was, now remember, we're Mormons, we're doing this on the radio, we're involved in this public discussion. The number one question has always been, who has given you permission to do this? And I don't know, you know, that surprises me. There's some kind of thinking that someone can't talk about Mormonism publicly without having permission. There's a widespread view of that somewhere. And then the second question that has been asked a lot is, why do you do this? And the answer that we always had is that we do it because it's fun. We do it, as soon as we stop enjoying it, we'll stop doing it. The program that has generated the most calls, this just happened recently for me on the air, a program that I thought maybe wouldn't have any calls at all, and this without any question generated the most phone calls that I've ever had on a program, And this was when we had Chris Hicks on a short time ago talking about Mormonism in the media. And we must, in the movies and TV. And Chris was just deluged with call after call of people wanting to know if what they'd heard about this movie star, that movie star being LDS was true. And so we spent... So apparently there's a real belief out there that almost everybody of any prominence in the world has sometime or other become LDS. So, and at any rate, let me just conclude that and with indicating that there is simply no topic that I have encountered in both being on talk radio and listening to talk radio over the years in Salt Lake City that generates interest and phone calls to the same degree as Mormonism.
I'm sure I am by far and away the lesser known of all the people on the panel. I'm Martin Tanner. I have a program on KSL Radio from 2 to 4 Sunday afternoons called Religion Today. And as you can tell from the title of the program, it deals strictly with religion. I spent quite a few years of my earlier life here, and by that I'm not advocating reincarnation. I mean earlier in my life, in Chicago, where I was very much a minority. I think of, you know, the first grade class that I was in, far more than half. We lived in the Hyde Park area of Chicago. Far more than half of my class was black. Maybe another 20% was Greek, Hispanic, and whatever. And I was very, very much in the minority. And then my parents finished up school there and moved back to Salt Lake City, where they were originally from. I didn't remember anything about it. Looking around, I thought, God, you know, everybody looks the same here. And now when people say that to me, it kind of grates on me. I like to think of Utah as being a bit more cosmopolitan than that. And I guess the first chance that I really had to think that it had become more cosmopolitan was when I was at the University of Utah, and always having had a tendency to acquire a couple more pounds than I should, I was working out at the gym up there at the University of Utah, and some guy who was just a fun guy to talk to, we got acquainted and had talked about skiing and doing this, that, and the other. And then finally we finished up with our workouts, went back in to change clothes, and he said, "Wow, those are really great set of underwear you have. Where did you get those?" Someone does not know. My response at that point was, "You could probably check ZCMI, but I don't know how successful you will be." And I thought at that point, maybe Utah is becoming a bit diverse, and people don't know quite as much about everything in Utah as we sometimes tend to think. Although I'm afraid that trend or that idea seems to continue, because as has been brought up by some of other panelists here today, you always seem to get the idea that it's Mormons think this, Mormons say this, Mormons do this, Mormons believe that. You can find as many ideas of what Mormons believe as there are Mormons out there. And when you're talking about non-Mormons, you can find as many ideas of what non-Mormons believe as non-Mormons are out there. And so the idea of lumping people into these two categories where they were born and they get set in one little assembly line that's non-Mormon, one little assembly line that's Mormon, it just seems to be pervasive. And I think it's unfortunate. Because of that, I have tried to deal with religious topics on the air to sort of remove the stereotypes. And the most fun that I have on the air is open phone segments where anyone can call in and say absolutely anything they want to say within FCC guidelines, which are pretty lax, whatever they want. And I believe that nothing should be untouched in terms of questions or topics. And it's led to a lot of fun discussions on the air. I don't think the church has anything to hide, the LDS Church has anything to hide in terms of topics. I don't think that those who are unacquainted with the Latter-day Saints in this community here should have anything to hide in terms of dialogue or what they will or will not discuss. And I think that's healthy. I think it's very healthy for people to understand more about the whole concept. There was a panel discussion here yesterday with Chris Allen of American Atheists, who, for one reason or another, I seem to disagree with once in a while when we talk. And I told Chris, I said, you know, there is a little bit of a downside to all this. And he said, well, what is that? And I told him about, you know, the threats that I had on my life from wacko crazies who had listened, and the restraining orders that I had, and the concealed weapons permit I'd been forced to get, the gun I have in my possession from time to time because of recommendations of people in law enforcement, and I'll leave it at that. And Chris said, what? Well, I've never had anything at all, even remotely close to that, happen to me. And I thought, what am I doing wrong here? I thought I was part of this this majority group who everyone would believe is sort of in control here. Why would anybody be upset at me if there weren't more people upset at somebody like Chris Allen? But for whatever reason, I suppose that doesn't always seem to be the case. But talk radio, when you deal with Mormonism, seems to be a wild and crazy thing. It seems to be an issue that just goes on forever and ever, and I never cease to be amazed at the things that come up. I was doing a program a couple of years ago, and I was just about 5 minutes before the news segment, and my producer started knocking on the glass and kind of pointing over, you know, and finally holding up notes, typing things on the computer screen. You have to talk to this person during the break. You have to come out during the break. And so I came out to see a guy who looked like $1 million. I mean, you know, $800 suit, fancy shoes, starched shirt, perfect tie. And the guy looked like a bank president or something, or if you will, you know, like a stake president or something. And it just I walked up to him after, and he reached out and shook my hand and said, "Hi, I'm John the Revelator, and I've come with a message for you." I thought, "Oh no, here we go." It's absolutely incredible. I have been told over the years by wacko fundamentalist polygamists that God told me that I should join their organization or I would be destroyed, to people like John the Revelator, to people who have, you know, been reincarnations of early LDS church presidents. It's just absolutely unbelievable the people that can come out of the woodwork. Some of the funnest discussions that I have had, though, are with people with whom I share very little in common in terms of my belief systems. I enjoyed thoroughly having I'm very fond of saying, extremely distant relatives, Gerald and Sandra Tanner, on the radio. And I've had fun a couple of years ago with Van Hale, having lunch with Ed Decker. And it was just great fun for me to see Van look Ed Decker straight in the eye and say, "Come on, Ed, you don't really believe all this stuff you write down is true, do you?" And see Ed squirm a little bit and try to change the subject. It was wonderful. And very different points of view, people who can have a dialogue, and I think that is what talk radio is all about. To dispel a couple of the myths, when I decided to move over to KSL, I was like, "Oh, wait a minute, you're going to run into censorship over there." I am thrilled to report that I have not had a single program that I have attempted to air on the program censored in any way. I've done some that have been just as controversial and wild over there as on any other programs. although I guess wildness is in the eyes of the beholder. I don't expect to hold a candle to Tom Barbary or Kay Henry in terms of the things that they have done. And by the way, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to them. There's a coffee maker at KSL. Yes, you can find a button and get a Coke out of the soft drink machine over there. It's surprisingly a fairly diverse group over there, and I've enjoyed it over there. I don't have anything else.
Before we turn the time over to your questions, and if you have any questions, please come over here to my left, and you can get here on the microphone. Or before the panelists ask each other questions, I need to recognize some people in the audience. And if they would stand up, over in the corner over here, I have Rick Taylor and Todd Herman from KCNR. These young men are basically brand new for the talk area or the talk format in the area, but they have already caused a lot of controversy. And I will mention this, that during the Rachel Bachman West High School matter, they were the only station that was able to get Rachel Bachman on to interview. So they've kind of sparkled in that area. I also have Mills Crenshaw here. Mills, if you say hi. Mills is another veteran in the talk show area, and he actually is the originator of Religion on the Line on K-Talk, the original host before Martin and before Van. I don't know if there's any other talk show hosts in the audience. I don't see any. They are? Okay. Thank you. Okay, panel, you have questions for each other. Van had one for Kay.
Kay, I...
You were the Danite that blew up the transmitter. I don't want to hear about this. Don't tell me everything. That's what I say to my kids. Yeah. I don't have to know it all.
Yeah, it was interesting when the transmitter was blown up because there were at least four talk show hosts on the station who were sure that the transmitter was blown up because of them personally, and we were one of them. We were sure that they were trying to get us off the air. John Henry Yond announced that they blew up the transmitter to get him off the air, and Ed Decker did the same thing, and I think it was Pastor Dwayne Evertson who was also doing a program. So everybody was claiming credit for the for the bombing, yeah. I guess from the other side of it. But that wasn't my question. I would like to hear the story about. Typically you think of Christian radio as being something that's done out of an interest for a particular movement, and that there's not a profit motive in it. And you have a Jewish family with Christian radio stations. Yeah. I mean, what?
Well, I guess you just have wrong beliefs there.
I sure did.
As many people have told you.
No, I come from a radio family. I guess my father, whose name is Harold Schwartz, is now in the radio textbooks. Well, there's a new book out called Border Blasters, and he was one of the original border bandits, as the FCC would call them. He brokered time on a 100,000-watt station called XERF. He gave Wolfman Jack his start in life. Wolfman Jack, a friend of the family for many, many years. I remember being 10 years old and visiting the studio on Sunset Boulevard. That's where we had the studios. The transmitters were in Tijuana. They ran Religion by day and Wolfman Jack at night. So he was just used to running Religion, and we ran him on all of our AM stations till we sold him in 86. And I guess we got out just in time before all of the preachers dropped their pants. It was really great to get out of it at that time. But... I don't really know the history of why they did it. He and his Mexican partner were running Religion until the Mexican government told them that they couldn't do that anymore. And they were very successful at it. So that's the story. Go figure.
Thank you.
I've got a quick little story about Van. I was a guest on the radio at a San Francisco, you'll get a kick out of this one, Tom, radio station. And I casually mentioned before I was going on the air to the producer who I was talking to when he talked about, most recent guests I'd had on, that kind of thing, what kind of topics. I mentioned that I had Van Halen on the air. He said, Van Halen, what do they have to do with religion? And so You know, you have some preconceived notions in different areas of the country. It's for what it's worth.
Okay, I'll start off some questions again. If you have any questions, please come up to the microphone. My question, and I'll start off with the toughest one right off the bat, have any of you in your time on radio had close encounters with church officials to dictate or suggest or hint what you should or shouldn't talk about on your programs in an official or unofficial way?
Well, I think Tom should answer that one first. I'm suspicious there.
Well, I can't imagine a church official even recognizing me unless they wanted to run over me in a crosswalk on downtown Salt Lake City. But no, I've had no contact at all. We are obviously not affiliated in any way with the LDS Church or KSL, which is the LDS station. It's kind of like me, top-heavy anyway. One thing did happen, though, when there was a bit of a controversy with regards to Paul Dunn, elder, I guess it was the elder Paul Dunn or
close
whatever,
enough,
yeah. and the fact that said that they're moving all of his books from the nonfiction to the fiction section of the Deseret bookstores, and apparently somebody called and said they would really appreciate it if we didn't make too much fun of Paul Dunn and his exploits and his writings, and that's about it. But no, really, call radio being what it is, we've had a lot of fun poking fun at the culture and the legislature. We don't deal in talking about religion. I try not to. I subscribe to the philosophy of the great philosopher Seneca, that religion for the masses is true and for the wise is false and for the rulers useful.
The answer to your question is no. Church officials, I would like to hear more from them. You can't get them. It's hard to get to them. When something really explosive happens, you sort of call over there, well, can I talk to the publicist? And they just don't return your phone calls usually. That's been my experience in doing talk radio for 13 or 14 years. I would like to hear from them. Is there an official line? I think they are peculiarly quiet when things are blowing up. Just my opinion.
GK, that's not what you said when we discussed the liquor laws. They were very much not. Giving you a bad time, Kay. That's all right. I've never had a church official ever call me.
Well, you
ever.
Should, maybe. Maybe they should call you.
That's right. After being here at Sunstone, I'll go back to my office, and there'll be this little message on the deck. Please, please call church headquarters immediately. They have. You must discuss this with your bishop. No, I have never had. I have never had any contact from anyone at church headquarters other than in connection with trying to arrange a program or a show. I've never had anybody try to steer me in one direction or another, anything at all like that.
My experience is similar. I've had that question asked hundreds and hundreds of times over the last 15 years. What do the brethren think of what you're doing? And I'm pleased to say I haven't ever heard from them one way or the other. That would be, I don't want to hear what's asking. A lot of people assume that that we're presenting church official church doctrine, and we've always tried to make that point clear that we're just talking from our own perspective and our own point of view, and not trying to represent anyone other than ourselves. So. But that question does come around all the time. What do they think? I have no idea.
Can I change the subject for just a minute? I listened to you, Tom, this morning. In fact, on the way down.
Thank you.
From Layton. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you very much.
And I appreciate the fact that you don't really like to discuss the abortion issue. I think that you're wise in that. But my question is, and don't ask me why I ask. I heard you say, Kay, that you have children. Tom, I don't know if you do or not.
Yes.
I'd like to know a little bit, if you don't mind my being personal, what it's been like to raise your children in Mormon, Utah.
I have two daughters. They're grown, and they both went to Catholic school. That pretty much was it, and then they went to one of them went to Weber State, and the other one to the University of Utah. And I have a grandson now that's a year old, And so the problem of raising children in Utah, you know, in the public school was not something that I really had to deal with, because they did go to, like I say, a Catholic elementary and Catholic high school.
Tom, you have a daughter that's in the business, isn't she?
I do. My daughter Gina works on X96, I think, on the weekends. I should know that. yeah, she calls herself the other Barbary. So
yeah, I just wrote this down so I could get all the points in, but I want to more or less direct this to Kay and Tom, and the others want to also. But I'm thinking that talk radio is the ultimate in freedom of thought and expression, and as we're privileged to exercise it in this country, and I'm as addicted to it as anybody. You know, I'm constantly listening to it. But do you sometimes feel some concern in your profession when radio talk show hosts are villainized and connected to such things as the Oklahoma City bombings and things such as that? Do you feel that some talk show hosts' scope of influence goes beyond opinion and sometimes leads to innuendo and bigotry, name-calling, and possibly civil unrest? And do you feel that some on-air talk should be suppressed, you know?
Well, talk show hosts are like any other animals, I suppose. You've got good ones, bad ones, those that are incompetent, those that are very competent. As far as being the cause of any civil unrest or physical problems, I don't think you can blame a talk show host any more than you can a book or a movie or a billboard or a poster. I mean, we're entertainers to start with, and if people plant seeds and ideas in other people's minds and they go out and act on them, the responsibility lies in the person who creates the act. So there's no way in the world that you can sit there and blame a talk show host, even though I was quite dismayed to see that G. Gordon Liddy received the First Amendment Award from talk show. I do not belong to this talk organization, whatever the hell it is, but First Amendment Rights Award for his kind of brand of talk, which I do not subscribe to. I don't think you can blame Rush Limbaugh or credit Rush Limbaugh, even though his audience is the biggest there is in the business, for getting anybody really elected or diselected. It's the people who actually want to show up at the polls, get active in politics, and participate in the process. So I don't think talk show hosts should either take credit or blame in that arena. No, talk should never be suppressed at all. You can't.
Talk should not be suppressed. I see in a tendency to do that the same problem that we have in other areas of society, and that is somehow trying to find secondary blame that you can elevate above primary blame. When you're trying to run around out there and say, you know, it's gun manufacturers or guns instead of the person who pulls the trigger that ought to be held accountable, when you're saying it's somebody who manufactures an automobile instead of the guy, or the alcohol instead of the guy who gets behind the wheel drunk that ought to pay, and it's talk radio instead of the person who put together the bomb in Oklahoma City that ought to be nailed, I think we've got a problem. It's always the parents' fault. It wasn't this poor little kid with the axe and the chainsaw that's at fault. It's the parents. It's the friends and the environment. You know, we always push for secondary blame, and that's foolish, in my opinion.
Okay, this is for the one from KSL. I was wondering if you ever had any of the BYU professors or feminists that were excommunicated on, or you think the general authorities would object to you to having them on the show, or what?
I doubt that they would object to my having them on. I have invited a couple on. I haven't had any of them on yet. We've had scheduling conflicts. I've certainly not invited all of them on, but I have had conversations off the air with many of them. As a matter of fact, Brent Metcalf, who is probably one of the more recent in that illustrious group, and I have conversations frequently on many topics. Fun guy to talk to.
Please, Todd.
Yes, a question for the panel. In the recent Nationwide Arbitron book, traditional talk radio took a huge hit. In fact, I believe, and I'm relatively sure, that K-Talk has disappeared from the Arbitron ratings locally. And I believe, Mr. Barbary, your evening show has even dropped in ratings. My question is about younger audiences. We succeeded in having Rachel Bachman on a radio station because she listens to our radio station. And I'm curious, as someone who's in his mid-50s, how do you adjust to trying to reach a younger audience that is not listening to you?
Well, as a matter of fact, call radio is number 3, 35 plus in this market, and it's number two in men, 35 plus. The market for talk radio is a 35 plus audience, and it is amazing how it's getting younger and younger. In fact, if you guys had enough money to subscribe to Arbitron, you'd be able to see that the numbers for the lower demographics are growing constantly for talk radio, whereas but we didn't have much of a lower audience before. In fact, 12 plus, if you want to look at those numbers, talk radio is extremely well received and growing. How you get a younger audience, of course, is that they have to be introduced, and you do that by advertising. And if they find out that the music that they're listening to is not really meeting their needs, you never know when they're going to grow up and start becoming involved in their the world around them and become listeners. My pleasure.
Would any of you want to, or have any of you tried to have any church official from the LDS Church on your program, higher or middle level or even lower official, to maybe attract the broadly conservative and mainstream Mormon audience here in the Valley? I know Van a few weeks ago had Wendell Ashton on, who gave some very interesting reminiscences of his boyhood and lifetime friend, President Gordon Hinckley, after he became president of the church. That was about the only program of any of the talk shows that I've listened to that I was able to actually recommend to my very sweet conservative mainstream mother. And I just think, well, how many more people are there out there like that that I could recommend that would be safe to those people that wouldn't get all upset by all this stuff, other stuff that's going on?
Well, let me address that. Station policies usually are that you don't go out of your way to bring up religion. I mean,
that's not the kind of shows that we do.
It's not the kind of shows that we do, yeah. It's... There was an LDS station that just went off the air.
No,
wasn't
but
there
I mean,
format?
I have a problem with the term LDS audience, because you have an audience, and it mm-hmm. consists of people, and people can be LDS. Somebody told me that everybody's a Mormon. They're Mormons, non-Mormons, Jack Mormons, and anti-Mormons. So everybody on the planet is a Mormon. So. So to think that I'm trying to appeal to an LDS audience or not to an LDS audience, in my mind makes no sense. I'm trying to appeal to the broadest sense of audience that you possibly can at all times. And if you fall into the category of LDS or Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, Christian, whatever, it doesn't matter to me.
Do you know what kind of response you got to that program on Wendell Ashton?
Yes, I... On my list, I had down what program generated the most calls. I was going to suggest programs that generated the least, and unfortunately, that would have been one of them.
Oh well.
And I thought it was a very good program. Here we have President Hinckley becoming president of the LDS Church, certainly a momentous event here for everyone in the Valley.
Yeah.
And here's someone who knew him as a missionary, and I couldn't get anyone to call in, and I. About halfway through the program, I'd run out of questions. I didn't quite know what to do with it. So I thought it was potentially a program that would generate a lot of calls. It just didn't. I don't know if people were turned their radios off and weren't listening, or just didn't want to call in, or what. But going back to something that Kay had said earlier, I think it was Kay. It's very difficult to get people. In any people who are even employed by the church to come on as guests. The thought of getting one of the apostles on the radio has never even occurred to me. I don't think there's a chance in the world that happening.
I'm the producer of Religion on the Line on K-Talk, and I'm the one that goes out and gets these people. And just to let you be aware, there are ministers and people of other religions who have turned me down for a variety of reasons. And there are LDS people that turned me down. So it isn't just easy to just pick up the phone and call and ask somebody, will you be on, because you're a public figure. Some are very particular. Some say, I will never be on talk radio. Some have said to me, oh, Van Hale, never. reputation gets around. I have the history of Van Hale's programs is it used to be back when he had Mormon Miscellaneous on KBBX. We didn't have enough time to get those who are called anti-Mormons on. We've had Ed Decker, Dick Baer, John L. Smith, you name it. Anybody who was anybody came on to this day. I cannot get him to come on now because they realized, and giving the man credit, that he wasn't going to fall over backwards for them. And I, every time I talk to these professional anti-Mormons, they refuse to come on the program.
Well, I wonder if it's because they feel they need to ask permission. That topic was hot a minute ago. I don't live in your community, although I was born here and grew up here. And in Southern California, one of the talk show hosts I enjoy a great deal is named Michael Jackson. And I wonder if there's any equivalent of that here. It hasn't occurred to me to ask, but this is a good place to find out. And I want to ask you, Kay Henry, whether or not, since you were spoken of as a Jewish woman and who is a feminist, whether you get a lot of questions from that vantage point of wanting to speak to the topic of feminism, which, frankly, I think is a misnomer. I think feminism is just women who would like justice and equality.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know if the topic is even interesting to other people. It's interesting to me because it's my vantage point, you know, and I'm a woman and I've always been in the working world and it seems that there were a lot of inequalities. But I've always stepped around the subject pretty gingerly in the years I've done talk radio because there is a backlash right now in the country that is very extreme against the notion of feminism. It's very unpopular to call yourself that. I was chagrined when I saw that I was one in the program today. But it's a tough subject to broach, really, in this community. I find it so.
I was insulted that they didn't list me as a feminist because I think of myself as a feminist. And if you don't believe me, you can ask my wife. It depends on your definition of feminism, and one that is for equal rights for all and being gender neutral with regards to merit and accomplishment, I think that is a feminist.
And pay,
absolutely. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I guess you could call me a feminist.
I think that most people are feminists. I ask the men that, too, who have called in. Well, you're a feminist, aren't you? Aren't you for equal? Do you have any daughters? Yes. Aren't you for equal opportunity for them? Oh, yes. Well, that's all it's about.
See, there were guys that have demonized the term guys. I mean specifically Rush Limbaugh when he was very entertaining in his early years when he used to be on K-Talk and he would talk about feminazis and he got a lot of press, a lot of publicity on it. And the wider the audience got and the more people started listening to him, he finally backed it off to feminazis consisted of 12 individuals that he could specifically identify. So he backed away from that, referring to all feminists as feminazis, because he found out that what he was doing was not benefiting him. So he modified his tone on that. So, but a lot of people have tried to demonize that term, which I think is really unfortunate.
Rick.
I just want to make sure I'm addressing this question to the right person, first and foremost. It was intended for Ms. Henry. Are you currently working at KTKK or talk radio in Salt Lake?
No, I'm on sabbatical.
Oh, okay.
I have been for about 3 weeks.
Okay. Well,
I don't know if I'll return.
Okay. Well, I guess taking that as read then. I know that when we had Rachel Bachman on KCNR a while back, you know, and I guess the question has to be addressed to you because of your past and perhaps present affiliation with K-Talk and because of, you know, your status as a Jewish woman. When we had Rachel Bachman on to discuss the whole West High incident, we said, look, Rachel, we've got to come out and ask you very honestly, you know, you have chosen to come on KCNR as opposed to the other stations that have been kind of clamoring for your presence. Why choose KCNR? And she said, well, to be very honest, I've been hearing some very scabrous, scathing, anti-Semitic remarks on other stations. And, you know, she did mention, you know, K-Talk specifically, that whatever, you know, finite number of people listen to K-Talk have a very sort of anti-Jewish bent to them, apparently, in her mind.
But since KCNR is so demure and
low pace. She decided to pick that.
Well, decidedly non-anti-Semitic in her opinion, anyway, okay, as contrasted with K-Talk. I mean, do you find any particular difficulty, or did you find difficulty in working in a station that at least two people in this community have characterized as being anti-Semitic?
I never had any problem with it that was overt or covert, to my knowledge. I think that what she was referring to were the types of callers that K-Talk was getting. I don't really think any of the hosts are anti-Semitic. And sometimes that's a little hard to control.
Okay, let me reclarify the question.
It's very hard to control what other people say, actually.
Let me rephrase the question. Let me clarify this. Did you find it difficult to work at a station where whatever finite number of callers you had were of a distinctly anti-Semitic bent?
Well, it's always been my experience when you come up against anti-Semitism to be uncomfortable. Yeah, sure, it's not something that you want to hear. Well, what do? I mean, you are who you are. You're born who you are. People are anti-Semitic. That's their problem. I can't help them.
The problem that I think a lot of people get into, or the box that they get into, is that they equate the callers to talk radio as to a cross-section of the American populace, and that is nothing further from the truth. What we have in talk radio is a format that appeals to a wide variety of people, but those that will actually call and participate is a very, very small percentage of those who are actually listening. I get lots of people I meet say, oh, I listen to the show all the time. As we ever call, oh, I would never call. Yeah. And I think that with the percentage is something around 3 to 5% of the people who listen to talk radio will actually call. So to try to gauge the winds or the attitude of the American populace by what you hear on talk radio is really a mistake.
I would agree. Thank you, Ms. Henry. I appreciate it.
Hey, are you guys really married?
Four.
Weddings available on Beta and VHS, Tom, if you want a copy.
Nah, but mine have always been to one of the opposite sex. I'm not bigotry. I'm just preferential.
Yes, your question.
I am a flaming heterosexual.
You and G. Gordon. Okay, it's fun to talk about radio. I was Salt Lake's first female rock and roll disc jockey in the early 70s.
All right.
But I've lived in Philadelphia for about 16 years, and the thing that I missed the most was Tom Barberi's show.
Oh,
it was great. My question, though, is, you know, in Philadelphia, there also is an issue of polarity and among the talk radio kinds of things. But the polarity is that NPR is noted as being the liberal talk radio, mm-hmm, and the pay stations are noted as being the conservative. What's going on in Utah relative to that?
As far as our station goes, I've never been able to. People have pigeonholed me as being a liberal simply because I think a person should be able to read whatever he wishes, view whatever he wishes, drink whatever he wishes, and think whatever he wishes. If those are liberal concepts, I would argue the point that those are extremely conservative concepts. I'm a fiscal conservative, but I suppose a social liberal in that regard. Limbaugh has a specific agenda of conservatism being his thing. G. Gordon Liddy is insane, so it doesn't really matter. Oliver North should be in prison, so that doesn't matter either. So as far as what our station is, I guess it depends on what time of day you're listening.
There is a lot of talk about NPR being the liberal bastion there. I don't know. In-depth reports on Rwanda, I don't get it myself. I know. There's Mills. Ask him. He's a talk show host. Excuse me. And that's one of his expressions or sayings, isn't it? Didn't you run a promo like that on KCNR, Mills? If you know, about the public radio and how it's so left. And here's the man you want to talk to about that. Mills, step up to the mic. Don't be shy now.
I came to listen to the panel, and ordinarily I just stay there and listen. I'm sorry, but I am deeply offended by something that's just gone on here. I realize that this could be an opportunity for inexperienced individuals who do not have talent and do not have the ability to gain an audience of their own to use this opportunity to try and bolster their flagging ratings. But it offends me deeply. I want to point out that people with real talent, like Mr. Barberi, don't have to drop their pants publicly to get an audience. I want to point out that I was the first talk show host to have Rachel Bachman, her mother, her father, and other people in this valley to talk about. And there's no bigotry involved in this. It's a public interest situation. And to see an individual who took a solid 2 share down to a 0.4, and another individual who took a predecessor morning team's 1.8 share down to 1.7, to convert this into this kind of a childish display offends me. I look forward to hearing from the panel.
Let's go on to our next question. I had this problem yesterday, but so
wait a minute. What about the NPR thing?
I think you waived that question.
Please.
The gal from Pittsburgh first. Did you get your question answered? All right. I'm not the one to answer that, but it's a way of slinging mud at NPR. I guess it's very unpopular. You know, public radio is about to lose funding, I guess, and it's because it's so-called liberal. I've never got that bent from it, but maybe I'm too thick in it. I don't know. Mills, what do you think? Say something about it. You ran a promo about that once.
It was part of an attitude liner set for the station. It wasn't specifically at NPR. It was just part of an overall attitude set.
He does have an attitude, I'll tell you.
I don't get to listen to it, so I'm afraid I don't have no opinion.
Mills is so
did.
Mild, he has no opinion on the subject.
I hope this is different than the tenor of the question so far. So, and because it may be, I'm going to confess something up front. I do not listen to talk radio. I find it highly distasteful in general. And when I'm being sarcastic, I feel that it's the extremely lonely or the extremely insane talking to the extremely egomaniacal.
I'll buy that. That's good.
So I'm confessing my bias up front. I was pleased to hear Mr. Barberi.
That seems to be borne out by what's happened here today, I might add.
Thank you. Mr. Barberi seemed to admit that there's a likely tendency for the audience to be much larger than the call-in group, and I was glad to hear that statement of fact, because I think what disturbs me with talk radio is that it continually denies its own power, and the quotation I think we all are familiar with is, "I'm just a harmless little fuzzball." And I'm seeing a lot of harmless little fuzzball behavior, and I'm seeing a lot of fan behavior in the audience. But I think realistically, we need to identify, and this is the area I would like to question the panel, that this is a very strong medium. While they're being so jovial on the air, they and their producers are selecting the callers carefully.
Not true.
That's just not true.
That's not true. That doesn't happen.
But that does happen nationally, Tom, I do believe.
Not on the local level, yes, indeed.
But not on the local level, but on the national level. I've never called into a national show. So for once I wanted to call Dr. Laura. But I've never called in a national show, but I'm given to understand from a lot of reputable sources that they do ask you what you're going to say, and they do, you know, sort of select. But on the local level, it just never happens.
The tone is also critical. As you mentioned in the situation of anti-Semitism, occasionally somebody slips through, they get on the air, they make remarks that the host may be uncomfortable with. But my concern is what occurs immediately following that. What occurs immediately following that is that the host is obliged to either cut them off or make a reaction-type comment that colors that I do or don't agree with that anti-Semitic remark, that indicates to the listener that this program and the people sponsoring this program do or do not support the comment that was just made. And in so doing so, I think, is one way that you delineate your various audiences by who you attract, by the types of topics that are discussed. So my question for the panel really is, What is your responsibility to the community and to your listeners to reveal your own, if not agenda — the agenda, of course, is making money — but your own biases, your own preferences for topics, the things that you wish to promote in our community? What is your responsibility to reveal those to us? What is your responsibility to admit that you may not be quite as harmless or powerless as the image would project?
First of all, you have to understand what we do. This is not a public service. To answer one question, the national talk shows, the calls are screened to the nth degree. These people are almost given a test before they can get on Rush Limbaugh's program. At the local level, we do not do any screening. We want your name and what topic you want to talk about. Okay, so you get the name Tom and the subject is football. And that's all you see on the computer screen. As far as what our responsibility is, our first responsibility is to our employers and our jobs. If we are not compelling, interesting, entertaining, informative, likable, you're out of a job. So your first responsibility is to yourself. If you guys aren't good, you're going to be gone. If I'm not good, I'm going to be gone. We are all gone if we are not getting the audience that the advertisers require, as you know, that the station needs to make money. Now, as far as the responsibility goes to our community, that's a personal thing. I don't feel like I can set the agenda for radio in Salt Lake City. I just hope to have a share of the audience that will sustain me in a job and make the advertisers and the bosses happy and entertain whoever selects to listen to my program. That's basically it. It's not rocket science.
Now, I'd like to respond to the question too briefly. I will always respond to any question that's put to me, short of somebody asks it 2 seconds before the top of the hour and you have to go to news. And then I'll usually do it on the other side of it. I have no question with anybody asking any question of me personally, and I don't try to hide an agenda. I think a lot of talk show hosts have fallen into the trap of trying to say that talk show is not a powerful or an influential media. Why? Because they don't want the next statement after that to be, well, then aren't you required to take some responsibility for Oklahoma City or some other horrendous catastrophe? I believe that talk radio is a very powerful and very influential media. If it weren't, who in the heck would advertise on it? I mean, if it doesn't reach anybody, why are people paying dollars to put ads on the air all the time? There's an audience out there. They listen. They're affected. If they weren't affected, they wouldn't call in. They wouldn't listen. They'd tune in elevator music. But it is influential. And yet, the idea of linking the dialogue that goes on the air there with the results like you have in Oklahoma City or some kook trying to shoot somebody or do some horrendous act is the same thing that I talked about earlier. I think the responsibility always has to be for the person who does the primary act, bottom line. And sure, I mean, you're going to find crazies out there who listen to some rock album and go out and kill cats. I mean, does that mean that whoever put the album together was with some hidden agenda trying to influence people to kill cats? No. If you have even somebody like G. Gordon Liddy making wild and bizarre comments about ATF people, does that mean he caused something like that to happen? I don't think so. Everybody has to choose whatever actions they are going to make and be held accountable themselves.
I know for a fact that Rush Limbaugh uses planted columns. It's been proven, okay? I'm serious, because his screening process is very precise, and
his show is choreographed to the nth degree, and yeah. It, when it gets to be a love fest after a while, I can't take it.
You'll notice that 95% of his calls are positive towards him.
Yeah. Quite a bit, yeah.
I take everybody who calls in, too, by the way.
I take all four people that call me, whenever they want. That's
Do you realize if we turn down all the calls from Mrs. B and Mr. Dupree, that half the callers would go?
Jeez. Yes.
First of all, I would like to make an observation. It continually amazes me that people who say, I don't listen to any talk radio, or I don't listen to very much talk radio, and yet they seem to know so much about the whole subject. And to you people who are name callers. Now, this is not the main thing I'm getting at, but I can't help but refrain from making this observation, which is happening right here and now. It belittles you to get involved in this name-calling. All right, we'll set that to rest. As one who travels a great deal and who listens to talk radio wherever I go, in Europe and in this United States from one end to the other, there is much talk radio and there are many talk radio show hosts besides the ones you have mentioned and continually to repeat. This shows your ignorance about talk radio. If that offends you, then you get yourselves educated and you get your radio and you listen to it day and night, 24 hours a day, any time of 24 hours.
And become imbalanced.
Well, if that's the way you want to be as imbalanced, I choose to be well balanced and to see as many sides as possible. All right, now. I would like to hear a little bit more about Salt Lake City. 40-some years ago, I was involved in radio and television when it first started in Salt Lake City, but I'm not from Utah. Hallelujah. It appears to me, from what you talk show hosts have said, that you are local talk show hosts only. Is that right?
Yes.
And you are dealing entirely with the local market. Would you please inform me and the others here what national talk show programs do you have piped into Salt Lake City that would give your audience and your market something to compare and contrast with? Would you please do that?
Tom's got a bunch.
We have, as I mentioned, Rush Limbaugh follows me at 10 o'clock. Then we have G. Gordon Libido, Liddy, and Oliver North, and Dr. Dean Adele. He's great, thank you. I'm not allowed to stay up that late.
KCNR has Michael Reagan evenings. You've got Dr. Laura.
I like right. Tom Likas. He's great.
Yeah. He's a character right now. Sure. So there are quite a few national ones. KSL doesn't have anything that's a national feed. K-Talk has some. They have Tom Likas currently.
Okay. We're trying to get Cato Kalin, but
there is also a radio program that's been going on for many years on KANN, which is a religion station called the Bible Answer Man, which, again, getting back to our topic of Mormonism on the radio, every once in a while we'll bring it up, and it's a national talk station or talk show.
Do you know if there's been any effort to keep Howard Stern out of the Salt Lake market? Because I'm from California, and I miss my morning Howard Stern. And I know darn well he'd blow everybody off in the morning if he was on.
I inquired about him. It's like they want a fantastic amount of money to run him.
Yeah.
And the local talk market is so split up, and there's so many talk stations now, I just don't see anybody pulling it off really soon. And what are you going to miss Barbieri?
Yeah.
No, we can't. He's a legend.
Actually, it was a decision made in a dark room at the back of a cafe by the program managers at all the major stations to keep him out of the market here. No, I just think the market
I could probably quote the figure. I just learned it. I mean, it was, I guess when the guy told me, I was just dead silent. He said, well, we can negotiate that price. I said, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because Howard Stern is quite hilarious. Right. I don't really think he'd go over well in this market.
Utahns only see his television show, which is about the worst part of his show. His news and social commentary is far above anything else I've heard.
He's a genius. Yeah.
Oh, he's amazing when it comes. His politics would fit into the mainstream Mormon category.
His politics are quite conservative.
Better than anybody else that I hear on the radio. He's a brilliant guy.
The only thing
that anybody knows about him in Utah is the sleaze when he gets the girls to come in and take their shirts off. And that's all they know. That's all they know about him here, is because that's all they show on the
It would be
E!
An interesting
channel.
Experiment to see how it would go over in this market.
It would be just an experiment. And for the money that they want, I just don't think you're going to see it real soon.
Well, bear in mind, in the beginning, Rush Limbaugh did not go over, because K-Talk had Rush Limbaugh, and it,
bombed.
At the time,
bombed.
Yeah, they had no audience. So you don't know.
I can't speak for any other station, but when I was program director at KCNR, I tried to get them to bring Stern in for the morning show. They wouldn't touch it. They were afraid of
it. I think that's sad that they are afraid of Howard Stern, because if you're talking about freedom of speech and that people...
Well, it's not afraid so much. It's an economic thing. And, you're not going to go and invest an awful lot of money if you can't guarantee your return on your dollar. And there is a fear that Howard Stern may not work, and the expense it would cost, as Kay mentioned, to get him might not be justified. So it's a business decision.
I think I think someone should look at it, because his audience ranges from teenagers to people in their 70s. I'm a doctor. And every doctor at the hospital I worked at loved listening to Howard Stern.
Go buy a station,
but again,
plop down some bucks, and
but my
run
show
him
wasn't
on the air.
Available in your town, so what can I say?
We'll end here with the last comment by Rick Taylor.
I was just going to clarify. What was your name, sir? Tim, I was just going to clarify for you that the reason Howard Stern is not picked up in Salt Lake is not necessarily because of an overly exorbitant price. It's not even necessarily because of his content. It's because when you sign with Infinity Broadcast to syndicate Stern and Don Imus and to some extent, leading a whole lot of people, they have a 3 to 5 year non-negotiable ironclad contract that you cannot get out of. In other words, because Stern, to be very honest, would fit perfectly into the KCNR 1320 lineup right now. It's exactly the type of thing we try to do. So he would fit very well. The reason we don't is if you get Stern and you sign for 3 year minimum, if you spend $750,000 bringing him his show for the first year and it bombs, you're still required to pay him that $750,000 for the next 2 years, even though you may be taking a bath on it. And and no station wants to go into a deal where they have 3 years that they must be affiliated with the program. It's common for syndicated shows to have 30 or 90 day escape clauses. Stern has a 3 year escape clause, which is why he's so difficult to deal with, and that's why he's not carried here. Just so you know.
Thank you. We have run out of time. We appreciate our panelists for coming, especially Kay Henry, who came down from Idaho to be with us. Next year I will pick a safe topic like Jell-O. And we thank you for being here today.
Thanks for joining us for this hour's coverage of the Sunstone Symposium, coming to you live from the Salt Lake Hilton at 150 West, 500 South in downtown Salt Lake City. Sunstone thanks KCPW and Clay Anderson Audio for their assistance in broadcasting this year's symposium. We've just heard a talk radio panel, including several personalities from the local talk radio scene, including Tom Barberi and Martin Tanner, Kay Henry, Van Hale, and Steve Mayfield. We hope you've enjoyed this session of the Sunstone Symposium. We will break for lunch, and at 2:15 we'll be back with a paper on German Mormons during the late 30s and during...